Remember, you control your destiny. Don't listen to the voices that may come from inside of you, and don't listen to the voices that discourage you from outside. If I can succeed, so can you. Sincerely, Jamie Reaver, proud first-generation college student.
Hello, and welcome to Letters from the Lunchroom, a podcast by Communities and Schools of Mid-America. I'm your host, Victoria Partridge. Communities and Schools is a nationwide nonprofit which connects students and their families to local resources in order to remove barriers so that they will have greater success in school and in life. During this podcast, we talk to people who have a relationship with our organization. From students to staff members and alumni to volunteers, we know that people who connect with nonprofits have a story that led them there, and we want to know that story. Stay tuned as we head into the lunchroom with today's guest, Jamie Reaver, current executive director of United Way of the Flint Hills and upcoming executive director of Kansas Appleseed. Hi, and welcome to the lunchroom, Jamie. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks, Victoria. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, although we are recording this on Friday the 13th, so my fingers are crossed that we will not have any bad luck, but that we will only have the best of luck that Friday the 13th could possibly bring to us and have an awesome recording session.
I like your attitude, though I have to admit, I did have a black cat in my path this morning, so I'm a little nervous.
Oh, okay. Fingers are crossed that this will be fine. So I would like for you to start off our conversation by doing a more detailed introduction of yourself than what I provided in the intro. So if you would, please tell us about you.
Yeah, I have been at the United Way of the Flint Hills for the past 10 years, and I've been the executive director that entire time. And then in just a few weeks, I will be the new executive director at Kansas Appleseed. And so focusing on my time at the United Way, I really have had just a great opportunity to get involved in local organizations, help develop some initiatives, and find, you know, some new partners like Communities and Schools that are doing some great things in our communities that, you know, the United Way definitely wants to be involved in. You know, nonprofit organizations are my passion. Ever since I graduated from college way back in 1994, I've only worked at nonprofit organizations. And, you know, that was sort of by choice and by design, because I just really have always wanted to contribute and make a difference in our communities and help empower and strengthen people to live their best lives.
So you and I, we've known each other for a while. We know each other professionally and we know each other personally. Our kids are in the same grade. We both live here in Emporia, Kansas. And I definitely feel that everything you just described about yourself is very accurate in regards to why you love working for nonprofits and in nonprofits and with nonprofits. But I know that whenever I talk to people, that it is often something that started off earlier in their lives that really kind of pointed them in the direction of working in this area. Because I know that you didn't go into nonprofit work to, you know, make a ton of money or become super famous, but you did it because, like you said, you truly love giving back. So I know that you said that that was something that you've been doing ever since you graduated from college, but is there something growing up that impacted you that you feel really kind of set that path in motion for you?
You know, oh my gosh, there's absolutely a defining moment in my life. And so it's just, I kind of have to chuckle that you've been asked that. And it goes back to when I was 5 years old, actually. Wow. And I was, you know, in kindergarten. And one of the big things that my grandmother did, she was a volunteer at our local thrift store. And she loved to take her grandkids with her to volunteer. And so one day, you know, I was five and it was finally my turn to go to the thrift store with grandma. And it was a big deal because my cousins and my siblings had always just wowed me with amazing stories about what it was like to volunteer with grandma. And it was my turn. And I spent the night at her house because we had to get to the thrift store early on a Friday morning. And we woke up and it was blizzarding. And I remember thinking, oh my goodness, we're not going to be able to go today. And my grandma said, oh, we have a job to do. We're going. And so we drove through these snow-packed streets of Hays, Kansas, you know, winds were blowing snow everywhere, and we got to our job at the thrift store. And of course, you know, no one else was really out in the storm except the other elderly volunteers, because they all took their jobs so seriously. And during that day, it was a slow day. It was a cold day outside, so there wasn't a lot of business. And all of a sudden, this woman walked in, and she was clearly freezing. She had on just a trench coat. She had regular tennis shoes on. Her face was red. She had no gloves on. And she asked if she could stop in for a few minutes so that she could warm up. And so the volunteer said, of course. And they went straight into action. I mean, someone put a chair in front of the space heater. Someone else, you know, brought her a cup of hot chocolate. And they started to get her story out of her. And this woman was walking from the Hayes Holiday in all the way out to Fort Hayes that day because her husband was participating in the Special Olympics and he was going to be playing basketball, and she wanted to be there to cheer him on. That walk was probably about 5 miles, and she was doing it in that blizzard. And when these women heard this, they went crazy trying to help her. So someone went and got her some winter boots from the shoe room. Someone found her coats, gloves, a hat, a scarf, you know, and got her warmed up and gave her some hot chocolate to take along her way. So that way she could, you know, go see her husband play in his basketball game. And for me, that was just like this defining moment of watching just these people take in a total stranger and wanting to help them and wanting to improve her life. And I just thought, what a difference these women made. You know, I'm 46 years old. So it's been 41 years since that day happened. But I remember it was like it was yesterday, because I saw the impact that they made.
That's so amazing. And I'm just sort of like processing the story because it's so cool. So that happened when you were 5. Are there other instances as you grew up and became an adult that kind of added to that story?
Yeah, you know, that really just stuck with me for so long. And so when I finally got old enough to, you know, create some of my own volunteer opportunities, I definitely took advantage of that. And so being in junior high and then going into high school, you know, I did a lot of community service. You know, I was a candy striper back at the hospital in Hayes, Kansas. I volunteered at the thrift store as I got older. And then I did a lot of community service at my high school. And, you know, and my high school was a great school that they recognized students for doing community service. And I remember one year, maybe it was after my sophomore year or my junior year, I won like the, you know, the community service award of the year or something, you know, pretty special like that. And of course I didn't do any of it to be recognized, but it just really, you know, just kind of fed my soul, and it's what I enjoyed most. And then to find out that I could actually, you know, make a living by giving back to the community was just the icing on the cake.
Oh, I feel you on that one. And I love that whole phrase, how it feeds your soul. That's exactly how I feel about it. And I think that a lot of people who work in nonprofits and are listening to this podcast are kind of just like sitting there shaking their heads going, yeah, that's exactly it. So I know that just a little bit over 5 years ago, I made an announcement on Facebook on my personal page that I had received this awesome job working for Communities and Schools of Mid-America. And like I mentioned earlier, you and I are, we're friends outside of what we do together, with our agencies working together. And you immediately reached out to me and you talked to me about our financial literacy program and wanting to get involved. And at that time, I didn't know. I had just been hired. I hadn't even started my job. So you obviously knew of Communities and Schools probably before I even knew of Communities and Schools. So when is the first time that you heard of this organization?
You know, I think I heard about it probably about 8 years ago, I would imagine. You know, time really does kind of fly by sometimes. But I remember another United Way director was talking about wanting to bring it to her community as well. And I just thought it was just this odd concept that, you know, what? Communities and schools, like outsiders come into schools and help kids. And the more I learned about it, the more I realized how I loved that idea. Because, you know, when I grew up, and I think for so many years, you know, people sort of treated schools like a high school or a middle school or an elementary school as a silo, as its own place, that, you know, where there is this like some kind of boundary where we let everything happen inside the school. You know, the teacher's got it handled, the principal's got it handled, the counselors have it handled. But then kind of realizing that there was this concept that sometimes schools need some outside support too. They need, you know, some allies. They need, you know, a support network to really, you know, help the kids in, within the building, you know, achieve their greatest success. And so when I started to hear what Communities and Schools was doing and that they were doing exactly that, just being a great ally to the educators, but more importantly, being a huge ally to the children and their families, you know, it helped me shift my own thinking about education, and it made me realize that, you know, all schools need, you know, a Communities and Schools representative to be that extra support.
Yeah, that's really true. You know, I've mentioned that I worked here for about 5 years and I've interacted with a lot of schools. And whenever I first started working for Communities and Schools, I naively thought, surely there are some schools that would not benefit from having our supports. But as I grew and learned more about the wide variety of assistance and supports that not only we provide, but that students and their families need, I realized that there's truly no school that would not benefit from having an additional person working for them. I can't imagine a school saying, oh, no, we're all good here. I mean, like, they may be doing a fine job, but there are always students who would benefit from having an additional piece of support, because as we've talked about in this podcast before, a lot of students that we work with are dealing with some really, really big challenges, whether it's families that are dealing with the side effects of poverty, or parents that are incarcerated, or if you listen to last episode that we had with Lachelle Nichols, she was providing support for students who were in mourning over the loss of a fellow classmate due to gun violence. So it's really such a wide variety of supports that we provide. And I truly feel, just like you said, that it's really essential. And I know, you know, I work for Communities and Schools, so of course I'm biased, but regardless, I am a transparent person who I would not say those things if I didn't truly believe them. And I feel like you are the same way, Jamie. And so I really love being able to say with so much honesty that I think you're one of our greatest champions here in the Emporia community. And because of that, we have seen a lot of growth. We went the first, 2 years of me working for Communities and Schools, we did not have our program in the Emporia school system. And then we got it in 2 schools. And then we got it in a 3rd school. And then this year we started it in a 4th school. And it is so exciting to see the community rally around to support the work that we do. And more though, to hear the feedback and the success stories from the students and the families that we are helping, and to hear them be grateful for the help that we do, and to know that what we're doing is actually helping those students and families overcome whatever barriers and challenges are in front of them. So that's what we do. That's why we do it.
Communities and Schools just does it so well. And, you know, I've had the opportunity to, you know, hear from, you know, the students, and I've heard from the parents, and I've heard moms tell these just powerful stories about kind of going at it alone and feeling as if, you know, they weren't succeeding as parents and struggling to get their kids what they needed. And then as soon as Communities and Schools came in and your support personnel at the schools, you know, started offering help and offering help in such a caring, non-judgmental way, like saying, you know, we're here to walk beside you, you know, and I hear those stories and it transforms people's lives. And, you know, in this parenting thing, you know, I've got 2 kids. It is hard enough if you have ample resources. I can't imagine how hard it is if you're struggling financially, if you are trying to, you know, climb your way out of poverty. And so that's why Communities and Schools is so vital to our communities, is because, you know, we don't have all the answers as parents. We don't know what all the resources are. So to be able to go to someone and say, this is what I'm struggling with, and then, you know, Communities and Schools just has this vast network where you know how to get things done, and it's impressive.
Well, and you were initially saying how, you know, there used to be this mind frame of schools took care of everything, they had everything handled. But honestly, that's a lot to put on the shoulders of our educators. You know, you're going to handle providing these academic resources to our students, and then also handle any kind of social emotional challenges that they may be having. Or if you've got a kid coming to school who is unable to concentrate and being disruptive because they're hungry, you know, taking time away from educating the 20 plus other kids in your class to focus on this one kiddo, that's a lot to ask of our teachers. And so one of the things that I really like about our program is that we come in and we understand that you guys are here to do a great job educating our kiddos, and we are here to help you with those kiddos who need a little bit more in addition to that great education that you're already providing.
That is so true. I have been able to get to know some of my own kids' teachers through the years, and you know, the work that I do at United Way, I'm pretty connected to, you know, all of our schools. And, you know, teachers would just tell these stories how they would keep, you know, a drawer full of gloves in their desk, you know, all winter long in case a kid needed them. Or, you know, they would, you know, call me and say, do you know where we could buy a pair of shoes for, you know, this student? Or, you know, or they would just say, yeah, I finally just had to go buy her a winter coat because she really needed one. And that's it. That's, teachers do a lot, and they do so much, and they do it so well. But then, you know, to put kind of that financial responsibility on them is pretty intense, and they do it because they care so much. But, you know, they shouldn't have to do that. And so I'm so glad that they now have a new resource in communities and schools.
Oh, yeah. And I know that I have quite a few teacher friends as well, and I can't think of a single one who has not told me that they have actually purchased school supplies for their classroom. And even here in Emporia, where we are very blessed to have one of our churches provide the initial school supplies for all of the students in our district, those school supplies, they run out, they break, they get lost, etc. And at every single one of our schools that have a communities and schools program, we do provide school supplies as well. And so that takes one more thing off of this responsibility that teachers were not asked to do, but they just took on because, like you said, they care so much about the success of our students. But again, that's a distraction from the students, or I'm sorry, that's a distraction from the teachers doing what they are hired to do, and that's educating the kiddos. And plus, that's a financial burden that the teachers do not need to bear, especially whenever we have a community partner like us come into the schools. And what we do is work with other community partners like United Ways, like people who give us in-kind donations of school supplies to help connect kids and their families with those resources so that teachers can focus on teaching and kids can focus on learning. And I'm so grateful for the work that we do, which sounds so vain now that I'm saying it on the podcast.
It's okay to be proud of your accomplishments.
Yeah, indeed I am. Speaking of being proud, you have shared with us some really dynamic experiences that you've had in your life. I am curious if you would please share with me one of your proudest moments in your life, specifically pertaining to nonprofit work in general.
Oh, wow. You know, I think because I recently announced I'm leaving the United Way, it's given me a chance to really reflect on, you know, the challenges we've had, the opportunities we've taken, and just some of our greatest successes. And, oh man, that's a tough question. You know, the one thing that I've done here at the United Way that I am most proud of was adopting Dolly Parton's Imagination Library and bringing that to our community. And that's, you know, an amazing program. In 2013, we brought this program to Emporia and all of our surrounding counties that our United Way cover. So that's 8 counties. And the program just lets people, you know, receive a free book for their kid because, you know, we want to instill a love of learning, but we also know that, you know, when a parent and guardian and a child can read together, it really creates, you know, some really great family time. And on top of that, you know, we know that the research is clear that when kids have access to books from a young age, they are better prepared for kindergarten. Their test scores in third grade, which is a huge important year for on grade reading, those test scores are better. And then a child's chances of graduating from high school on time are improved. So we're able to bring that program to our community. And, you know, despite the fact that it bears Dolly Parton's name and she, you know, runs an amazing program, it is funded by local organizations. And so, you know, when I think about the work that we've done in the last 10 years, I'm really proud that, you know, we are able to bring that program to our community. We have over 1,700 children a month receiving books from our United Way. And just in a couple of weeks, we will be giving our 100,000th book away, which is really impressive. So when I sort of think about, you know, what I'm proud of and any kind of legacy that I may be lucky enough to leave behind in Emporia, you know, it's the Dolly Parton Imagination Library.
Well, I, as an outsider looking in on the work that you have done, just with United Way, because that is how I have known you with your career wise anyways, I can definitely say that, the legacy that you are leaving as you do leave this position and move into your new position at Kansas Appleseed is greater than the Dolly Parton Imagination Library, although that is definitely a part of it. And I am so impressed with the amount of lives that you have helped touch and change in the 10 years that you've been at United Way. And I thank you for that.
Well, you are welcome. And thank you. But, you know, I'm just such a big believer that at United Way, we stand on the shoulders of our community partners. And, you know, communities and schools being one of them. I think that, you know, we have 24 organizations that are doing really impressive work. So every year we're able to go out and fundraise because of these partnerships. So we succeed because you all are so awesome.
Well, thank you. So with that, we're going to wrap up the first part of this episode. And then we will be back with a second serving of Letters from the Lunchroom after this break. Please stay tuned. Welcome back. As part of our show, we ask each guest to write a letter to the students that Communities and Schools serves. The only guideline they are given is that it must come from the heart. We also warn them that they will be asked to read their letter aloud during the podcast. Jamie, are you ready to read your letter?
I'm ready.
Go ahead.
Dear students, you can do anything you set your mind to. You can control your future. Take it from me. Today, I'm the executive director of an organization. I have met amazing people from around the world because of my job, but please know my path was not always that clear. I'm one of seven children raised by an amazing, strong single mom. She encouraged all of her kids to be their best, work hard, be kind, and study hard. Those lessons matter the most, but the reality is the odds of me achieving success weren't great. A single mom with seven kids never has enough money. But because of my mom and because of some amazing teachers that believed in me, I was the first person in my family to go to college. I am a first-generation college student. The path was so hard, but so worth it. Remember, you control your destiny. Don't listen to the voices that may come from inside of you, and don't listen to the voices that discourage you from outside. If I can succeed, so can you. Sincerely, Jamie Reaver, proud first-generation college student.
Oh, I love that.
Thank you.
I didn't know that you were one of seven kids of a single mom. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. You know, and my mom was just such a strong, amazing woman. And of course, you know, with the story I shared earlier about going to the thrift store to do the volunteer job, that was her mom. So I've had a lot of just strong women in my life who, you know, just exhibited such kindness and grace when times really were tough. And so, you know, I never want to forget, you know, where I came from. I never want to forget that sometimes I didn't know where my next meal was coming from. My mom didn't know, you know, if she's going to have enough money to buy all the groceries she needed for seven kids. But, you know, she taught me the values I needed, and she believed in me, and that helped me believe in myself.
Oh, well, and the single mom aspect, it is something that touches me so much because I myself am a single mother of a 13-year-old, and I have not yet come onto this podcast and shared my story. I am planning on doing it someday. I'm just not sure when that day is because I do have a lot of other great people who I continue to get the great opportunity to, you know, hear their stories. But it's so amazing to continue to learn these histories of these people who I know or don't know, but you know, we all make these first impressions, and it isn't fair, but I honestly never knew, and I never expected that you would say that you were one of seven kids of a single mom, because you're right, that is a challenging situation to grow up in. And I think it's something that is really important that we share with kids who have similar situations, who can see that their outcomes and their goals are definitely achievable. But just like you said, it could be hard, mm-hmm. but it will absolutely be worth it.
You know, that's so true. And, you know, I don't share the story a lot, and, you know, and But I, you know, I realize that I need to, you know, I need other people to know that, you know, we look at others and, you know, and we make assumptions based on what their job title is, what their car is, what their house is, what their life looks like today. But, you know, I can promise, you know, your students, I can promise any listener that the path is hard for so many people. And, you know, they find a way to persevere and rise above whatever happened in their past. But, you know, no one has a perfect life. No one. And we really need to be honest with ourselves and with each other, because, you know, sometimes we set some really unfair high expectations. And we make a lot of assumptions based on what we present. But it's a hard path for a lot of people. And I just want people to know that if you stay the path and you work hard, you will see better days.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I hope it's something that you kind of have to experience to learn, but it's a really important piece to work on is perception. I know not just like your perception of others, but perception of your own personal situation, and to realize that things that are hard are only hard, usually temporarily. And that if you persevere and you rise above and you work on changing your perception, you can actually grow from something instead of letting it bring you down. And that people who do that, they end up having these just really amazing experiences that hopefully, just like you just did, will then go on to share that even though that things look good now, that they didn't always look good, and that there are times where things were uncertain, and not just uncertain, but were certainly hard.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I think what comes from, you know, from that and from my kind of, you know, childhood and all of my experiences, you know, I just, you know, my goal is just to, you know, to do good for others but show compassion. And that's one thing that I've always, you know, worked so hard to do is to, you know, to be compassionate, to be kind and to be helpful and non-judgmental, because, you know, we all need help. We all need a boost. You know, and I kind of want to just share kind of a related story, but not, and maybe it's a humble brag possibly, but you know, this morning, I posted on Facebook that I ran 6 miles today, which is the longest amount I've ever run. I wasn't running 18 months ago. In fact, I could barely run half a block without being out of a breath. And so I think that's just kind of a really great microcosm for sort of life in general, is that, you know, the perception is that, oh my gosh, I can run 6 miles, but the struggle and the fights and, you know, the achy knees and the hardship to get to that point today was not always easy, but man, am I proud of where I ended up today. And I'm really proud of what I was able to do, but know that, you know, I just don't wake up this morning thinking I'm going to run 6 miles, having never done it. You got to work hard for it.
You absolutely do. And that actually reminds me of a story that I want to share now, but I think I'll actually write a note down and I'll share it. It's part of my story. But it talks about that and how looking at where you were just a short time ago, you never would believe where you are now. And a lot of it is just making a conscious choice to take whatever minor baby steps you have to take to get there, to continue to persevere. Do not give up. That is the number one thing, is to like just not give up, because things can get so hard sometimes. And I definitely understand that you and I were sitting here and we are currently sitting on like the good side of our lives. But number one, they haven't always been good. And number two, they might not stay right. Good. So it's that also that perception of appreciating this. And also when you can, then preparing for the future and trying to do things that you can do to help make sure that things are good. And then giving back as much as you can, and helping others. If you have extra and you can give it, then give it. It's whatever it is, time, kindness, like you were mentioning, something that we've been talking a lot about in communities and schools internally is grace and giving people grace. And that's something that I think about this is something that, Jamie, you'll probably laugh about because of you and I's personal lives, where they sort of follow the same path, as giving people grace in the drop-off and pickup line at the school where we drop our kids off, pick them up. And so giving people grace that maybe there's a reason why they're doing something that might be irritating me, the other drivers, you know.
That takes a lot of grace, Victoria. A lot of grace to do morning carpool.
But it's a nice reminder. You know, we don't know what those people are going through, and I should give them grace. It costs them
absolutely
nothing to give
absolutely
them grace.
You know, and I, you know, really think that's important for adults to, you know, to always give grace to kids and not think that because a child is acting a certain way that, you know, we need to take a hard line with them. But we just sort of pause and think, what is going through, what are they going through in their life? What do they need that I can potentially give them? And sometimes it's just that, just a compliment, a kind word, because kids, it's hard being a kid today. It's really hard being a kid today. And so they really need the adults in their life to show them that grace. So that's a good word, Victoria. Mm-hmm. So thank you for sharing that.
Well, and to be honest, I am a big fan of giving credit where credit is due. And the concept of grace and what we are sort of putting the emphasis on here in communities and schools is coming down from our leader, Melissa Martin. And so it was a speech that she recently gave to the all staff. And she mentioned grace, and it was just really empowering to me. But I did want to just touch base on something that you said just a little bit ago about giving grace to kids. And I know that I mentioned earlier about kids who are acting up in school. And I know that that is so frustrating for teachers. I know that it is so distracting to the other students. But to be honest, there is probably a very good reason why that kiddo is acting up. That kiddo may be hungry. They may be dealing with some crazy hard stuff at home that is unimaginable. If you listen to the episode that I had with Chris Ayers just a few weeks ago, that I absolutely bawled over that story that he said about the student who was being just violently abused by a family member and things that these kiddos are going through. And if we give those kids grace and we pause and we ask them what's going on and we truly take a moment to listen to their story and then we help, it changes everything, not only for that student, but for those people that student interacts with.
You know, and that's so true. And that's what something I also talk to my kids about. They're in eighth grade and 10th grade. And, you know, sometimes they'll come home and say, oh, so-and-so is doing this. And so, you know, I always feel like those are some really great parenting opportunities as well. And, you know, to remind your kids to show empathy and kindness and, you know, and their lives are pretty good right now, but, you know, if, you know, who knows what my kid's life would be like if I didn't have the mentors and the strong mom and the encouragement that I needed to be able to, you know, get through college. So, you know, I really want my kids to show that kindness and that grace.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It has such a ripple effect. And no matter what your current situation is, you can always show kindness. You can always show grace. And that's ultimately what I know that I would love to see everybody do. There was somebody, and please forgive me, I totally forget who I was talking to. And I asked them what superpower they would have, as I tend to ask everybody. And they said something, and I really need to, I think it was, oh, I can't remember who it was. I don't want to say who I was thinking it was, because I think it was incorrect. But they basically said, like, the ability to empathize with literally, like, everybody. And I thought, gosh, could you imagine what a different world we would be if every single person, you know, every person in politics, every person that was, you know, in religion, if we all had the ability to empathize with every other human being, and what a different world we would be in.
You know, and that reminds me of when my son was in sixth grade. He came home one day and he was sort of outraged by something he was seeing at school that he thought was inequitable. And he told me the story, and I just completely agreed with him that it was inequitable. And so I was able to, you know, call some of my mom friends, and we were able to talk to the school administration and you know, bring it up to them. And they saw the inequity of it as well. And that really made me proud that, you know, as a 12-year-old kid, my son was able to see something that that he was worried about. He was worried about how it was impacting his friends, and then to make that change. And so for me, that was probably just my proudest parenting moment, because, you know, I saw just everything that I'd hoped I'd been raising my kid to do. I saw it in action. And so if we can pass that on to our own kids, we're going to be a better society.
Absolutely. So before we wrap up this, the middle portion of the episode, I do want to ask you, what is the most important part of your letter that you hope listeners will take away from it?
I think it really is that letting people know that, letting your students know and letting your listeners know that just because we see someone today, we can't assume that everything was perfect to get them to where they are now. There was a lot of struggle, a lot of hardship, a lot of uncertainty. But if you persevere and if you work hard and try and take some risks, you're going to end up in a good place.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you, Jamie, for sharing your letter. We're going to take another quick break, and then we will be back for some extra credit. And we're back. Are you ready for some extra credit questions, Jamie?
I am. I'm a little nervous because I'm competitive, so I want to get an A+. So go easy on me.
Okay. Your first one, I think, is easy, but we'll find out. What is your favorite song to sing to on the radio?
Oh my gosh, that is hard. I don't know.
Really?
Well, I'm going to say Old Town Road.
Really?
I love that
song.
Oh
my gosh. That's awesome. So every time it comes on, you just can't
help
yourself.
That is correct.
Love it. I love it. And it's so current too. So that's fantastic.
Thank you. I try to be right up there with the current times, but also anything by Adele, I will totally sing too. But right now, Old Town Road.
Very nice. Okay. Question number two. If you could pick a superpower to have, what would you choose and why?
Oh man, the superpower I would choose would be to not have to sleep, because I love to get things done. So I don't know if that's a real superpower, but you know, I don't need a lot of sleep, but I wish I could just like stay awake 24/7, because I like to stay busy and doing things, and there's so much I want to do and there's just not enough time in the day.
Girl, I feel you, because I am the opposite of you in regards to, I do need a lot of sleep. I need like at least 8 hours, if not like 9 or 10, which I am sort of sitting here looking sheepishly because that's ridiculous. But my daughter is the same way. Even when she was an infant, she would sleep just like 8 hours to the night. And early mornings are not our best times. Coffee is my best friend. And if I had the superpower to not have to sleep, I would love it, because I just feel like, just like you said, I could get so much done and not have to worry about, oh, I'm drowsy, or oh no, I'm crabby because I'm so drowsy.
Yeah, I get probably 5 hours of sleep a night, and
oh,
I'm usually tired by the end of the week, but I can't sleep longer than that. So,
See, even it seems to me that you already kind of have a superpower compared to how many hours a night I sleep.
That's funny.
Okay, so your final question is, what is the number one reason why you feel that people should get involved with communities and schools?
This is the easiest way to impact a child's life. It's as simple as that. When I was a kid, the school only existed in a child's life from 8 a.m. until 3 p.m. And we didn't think we had to worry about, or schools had to worry about, or anyone had to worry about what happened in kids' lives from 3 p.m. until 7:59 a.m. the next day. And the reality is, you know, we know more now. The research is clear that, you know, kids need a lot of support. Families need a lot of support. And if those are the things that we need to do to make sure that kids and families can succeed, then we need to do that. And in my opinion, communities and schools is the best organization in our community right now to do that.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. And I promise I did not ask her to say that. I didn't know what she was going to say. We do not prep these shows. She didn't even know what I was going to ask her. So, but I do appreciate your passion and your commitment to, you know, being there and being a champion for our program.
Well, thank you. You guys make it easy.
Nah. So that is the end of this episode. A big thank you to Jamie for sharing her story with us. For more information on Communities and Schools of Mid-America, including a form that you can submit if you'd like to be a guest on the show, please check out our website at cismidamerica.org. Make sure that you subscribe to this podcast and follow us on social media at cismidamerica. Thank you all for joining us on this episode of Letters from the Lunchroom. I am your host, Victoria Partridge, and until next time, class is dismissed.